නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස සම්මා ආජීවෝ ආනන්ද භාවිතෝ බහුලීකතෝ රාග විනය පරියෝසානෝ හෝති දෝෂ විනය පරියෝසානෝ හෝති මෝහ විනය පරියෝසානෝ හෝති ඉති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all can remember, we are discussing Brahmana Sutta, or it is also called as Janussoni Brahmana Sutta, where Buddha is explaining about the Noble Eightfold Path. So in one occasion, a Brahmin called Janussoni was going through the city of Shravasti, and the speciality there is that he is using entirely white clothing, and again his horse chariot is completely on white color. The horses used were white color, and the canopy was white color, reins were white color, wheels were white color, so everything is in white color. So therefore the people get surprised by looking at this sight, and they were quite happy, and they were telling that this is kind of a divine vehicle, this is kind of a Brahma vehicle. So therefore they were quite admiring that vehicle, and this was noticed by Venerable Ananda, who was on the alms round, and after returning back to the monastery, he informed this to the Buddha, and he make a request telling that, Bante, is it possible for you to give some sort of an analogy between this kind of a vehicle according to the Dhamma? So then Buddha says, yes, I can make such an analogy. So it is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path, which we can say as the Dhamma vehicle, as the supreme vehicle, as the divine vehicle, as the vehicle which is being used in the crossing over to the other shore to be free from the samsara. So that is the vehicle. So now we are discussing the Noble Eightfold Path, and now we have come to the Sila Sikha, that is the morality. So in the morality, you know, there are three components: right speech, right action, and right livelihood. So we have already discussed right speech, and then we have discussed about right action, and today I am going to discuss right livelihood. So before going to start off talking right livelihood, I like to give a small description about the wrong livelihood. So wrong livelihood sometimes explained in terms of the direction given for the lay people as well as for the monks and nuns. So first of all, if we see the explanation given for the monks and nuns, so there Buddha mentioned katamocha bhikkave miccha ajivo kuhana lapana nemittikata nippesikata labena labang nijiginsanata ayam bhikkave miccha ajivo. So that sort of explanation is given for Miccha Ajiva when it comes under the monks. So what it means is that these are certain wrong kinds of ways that monks and nuns are trying to impress others. So one thing is called Kuhana. We are basically trying to impress others using various ways where the lay people become somewhat happy, and they become appreciative about the way of living of this particular monk. So it is basically called scheming, where you are showing certain qualities which is not really one is possessing, rather trying to pretend that one is having. And then there is something called talking in order to receive, that you are talking that in praise of the Dhamma, you are talking in praise of having less with less, basically with few wishes. So you are admiring those kind of qualities. So hearing that, the other lay people feel that you are really a worthy person, so therefore I should give some offering to this particular monk. So he himself is not basically adhere to those good qualities, he is not cultivating those qualities, rather he is trying to pretend they are as well. And then there's another one called Nemittikata, where one is trying to hint what he want to receive. He's admiring and telling that this is really good, and some so and so has already received it. I also may get something like that. So you are hinting to a group of lay people in order to get the same requisite. So this is called neimittikata, or we can call it as hinting to receive. And then there's the other one called nippesikata, where one is criticizing the lay people who are not really giving something better. If someone has given something very small or not that expensive, so he is basically criticizing it, expecting that ultimately they will give a better one. So this is called nippesikata. And then there is another one called labena labang nijiginsanata, where one is trying to exchange what one has with another person who has a better one. So likewise, there are different ways that the monks and nuns are trying to impress others in order to receive better requisites. So this is basically Buddha mentioned as wrong livelihood for the monks. And there are other ways and means that monks are also trying to get various good requisites, like they are conducting various activities like say going through the lay people's horoscopes, fortune telling, and say doing some kind of what you call this, giving some medicine. So likewise, there are many activities which one is trying to give as a service to lay people. So ultimately, lay people feel that this monk is really helpful to me, and they are helping me in the material side, so I should also give something. So Buddha has basically prohibited the monks doing all this, giving medicine and palm reading, fortune telling, and etc. etc. So these are called anesana. So there are 21 types of such kind of wrong livelihood where Buddha has mentioned. So that is also comes under the wrong livelihood. So basically, monks are restricted or prohibited in doing these kind of activities in order to impress lay people, and or they themselves are involving in such activities and trying to get money or trying to get fame and gain, and so that they will have a luxurious life. So when it comes to lay people, so they are also Buddha mentioned what is not appropriate for lay people to get involved with. So this is coming under the Vanijja Sutta in Anguttara Nikaya Panchaka Nipata, where Buddha explained 5 types of trade which is not suitable for a lay follower. So first one is called Sattha Vanijja, where trading in weapons. So nowadays actually many countries, many developed countries, their main trade may be the trading of weapons. But Buddha didn't approve it. Buddha says if you are doing a trading of weapons, you are not following the Noble Eightfold Path, and you are not following the correct livelihood. So the trading of weapons comes under wrong livelihood. Then the other one is called Sattva Vanijja. So that is the trading of humans for slavery. You know, in the good old days, and certain countries actually they trade human for their some activities. So those are difficult to conduct, and they need manpower, but they are not giving proper wages, and they are using these slaves to get it done. So there are many revolutions happen in order to avoid such, and so this kind of trading of slaves is something that Buddha didn't approve, and that is also coming under the wrong livelihood. Then it comes to Mansa Vanijja, trading animals for meat. So this is also something common in even today, that there are many countries who are trading immense amount of animal. It may be cattle, it may be cows and ox, and it may be pigs, it may be say goats. So like that, there are many mass level trading of animals is there, so which Buddha didn't approve. And not only the mass category, mass level, but even the small level, small scale trading of animals, which Buddha didn't approve, because they are being ultimately slaughtered, and that is what Buddha Buddha didn't approve. So basically, trading of any kind of an animal for meat is not approved. So that is coming under the wrong livelihood. Then one is available, the Majja Vanijja, where trading of intoxicants, where people are using they come into heedlessness and they are losing their mindfulness, and that is the trading of various alcoholic drinks and drugs and all these things. So such trading is also not approved, and that is, if one is conducting it, it comes under the wrong livelihood. Then Visa Vanijja is where one is trading poison, so various kinds of poisons in terms of, say, pesticide, insecticide or various other poison, that is also not approved, and it is also coming under the wrong livelihood. So we can see that the Buddha, in terms of the trading, there he is giving some sort of a criterion that don't get involved in these five types of trading. So this is considered as wrong livelihood. Now we can get on to the correct livelihood. So when it comes to Samma Ajiva, correct livelihood or right livelihood, Buddha mentioned it is of twofold. Samma Ajivang Pahang Bhikkave Dvayam Vadami. Monks, I am telling that right livelihood is twofold. Atti Bhikkave Samma Ajivo Sasavo Punya Bhagyo Upadi Vepakku. Monks, there is one type of correct livelihood which is based on the wholesome side, meritorious side, and it produces good results, but it is having some amount of taints. The other category is called Atti Bhikkave Samma Ajivo Anasavo Lokuttaro Maggangu. There is another type of Samma Ajiva which is noble, supramundane, and it is a path factor, and it is fading away of defilements or fading away of taints, influxes. So these are the two categories that Buddha mentioned when we are discussing right livelihood. So first of all, then we will check what is this correct livelihood in terms of the mundane type. Now, Idha Bhikkhave Arya Savako Miccha Ajivan Pahaya Samma Ajivena Jivikam Kappeti. Now here Buddha mentioned that one is giving up the wrong livelihood, and now one is trying to engage in the correct livelihood. Now one has to find out what is correct livelihood. So that is where Buddha mentioned that whenever you conduct something bodily, that you should do some sort of a reflection. When suppose you are going to make a kind of an activity, bodily activity, and he recommend before you do it, do a kind of a wise reflection, whether it is beneficial to me, it is not harmful to me, and it is beneficial to the others as well as it is not harmful to the others. So such a reflection is necessary. And while you are engaging in that activity, so Buddha again mentioned that you better reflect back and see whether you are doing the correct thing and it is not harmful to yourself and the others. And at the end of the action also, you got to do a kind of a reflection. So I have completed this task, whether is it any kind of repercussions which is harmful to the others or to myself, or is it really beneficial to both sides. So this kind of a reflection is mentioned when it comes to Samma Kammanta, and it is also applicable for Samma Ajiva as well. Now there are other points that as lay people one can recognize, where in order to involve with something correct or correct livelihood, so it is not easy in that sense, because you know trading of animal or trading of poison, trading of weapons and cheating others and earning money is easy in one sense. But on the other hand, if you are going to do something correct, something good, and you want to have beneficial results for yourself and the others, so such occupations may be rare. So that is the difficult part. So when you are trying to find such occupation, there you have to have a lot of effort. And while you are engaging in such occupation, there also you need to have a lot of effort. So therefore, Uttana Sampada is something that Buddha mentioned, that you always have to have some sort of an effortful attitude to involve in such correct livelihood. Because it may be difficult and you may even not get enough, say, profit. But at the same time, you understand it is beneficial to me and beneficial to others. So you are continuing it with a lot of effort. So therefore, you need Uttana Sampada, kind of ongoing effort to continue the task. And not only that, there are again Buddha mentioned Arak Sampada, where one using your own sweat and your own effort with your own brain power, with your own time. Suppose that you are able to accumulate some money, accumulate some wealth. So that has to be protected. Otherwise, if you simply ignore it, then it may be stolen by someone, or it may be subjected to some sort of natural disaster. So such things are there, such dangers are there. So therefore Buddha asked to come up with various ways and means to protect what you have earned, what you have developed. So that is the other part. And the third one is Kalyana Mitrata, where you are not simply staying where you are, you always have some sort of a desire to develop. So you may get further instructions, maybe to develop the right livelihood, or you may get certain further instructions to develop your spiritual aspects. So likewise, you are associating some good people who actually try to help you and try to guide you. And Samajivikata is another important part which is coming under right livelihood, where you are trying to balance of what you earn with the what you are going to expend. So balancing of living. So if you are trying to spend more and more, which is not balancing with what you are earning, then ultimately you are going to bankrupt. And on the other hand, you are earning a lot, but you are only spending very little, you are becoming quite stingy. So that is also not appropriate, because then you are not basically being happy yourself, and you are not basically spending enough to make others happy. Suppose you have children, you have husband, you have wife, you have parents, and many, say, social responsibilities. You also have a lot of money, a lot of wealth, you are well-to-do, but you are not spending. You are stingy. So that is also not approved. So here, therefore, Buddha mentioned that one has to see how this income and expenditure has to be balanced. So this is coming under the Samajivikata, knowing one's income and the expenses, and living within his means, being neither extravagant nor stingy means. So basically balancing. Now, whenever you are involving in this, so we have to come to another area where you are trying to protect the precepts, and again you are trying to get others also to protect the precepts, and again you are trying to sort of appreciate protecting of precepts. So these are three aspects Buddha mentioned in Sotapatti Samyutta, which is called Veluva Dvara Sutta, where he is talking keeping yourself as a model, keeping yourself as an example. Attupanayikan Dhamma Pariyaya. You are keeping yourself as a model or as an example when you are conducting something, when you are especially protecting precepts. So first, Attanacha Paranatipata Pativirato Hoti. So it is applying to each and every precept. So what Buddha mentioned here is that one is keeping the precepts to oneself. So he is not breaching it, rather he is trying to keep in the precepts, and he is honestly trying to protect it. On the other hand, Parancha Panatipata Veramaniya Samadapeti. So you are basically encouraging others also to protect the precept. පානාතිපාතා වේරමණීයාච වන්නම් භාසති. So that is the third aspect where you are appreciating, speaking in praise of the protecting of the precept. So this applies to all and all the precepts. So you are also protecting the morality. You are trying to sort of encourage others also to protect the morality. And again, whenever you are talking in praise of protecting the precepts. Now this is applicable to right livelihood. Suppose you are engaged in the correct livelihood and you are honestly doing it and you are encouraging others also to do the right thing and you are praising it. So when it comes to production, say various livelihood is there. Say people are producing many things as we discuss. So sometimes many luxurious things are also they are producing. And not only that, they are using various advertising mechanisms to advertise. So if we are refining these livelihoods, so now we can come to another level. So how we are going to refine right livelihood? So first of all, we are not conducting those wrong livelihood. That is the trading of weapons, trading of say poison, trading of alcohol or intoxicants, trading of slaves, etc. So you are not doing it. Now suppose you are trying to find a good job, correct occupation. Suppose you are engaged in that. In the same time, you may refine it slowly. So if there are any things that you recover or you understand that there are certain parts are harmful to myself and certain parts are harmful to others, so those areas you have to refine now. So slowly you are further straightening right livelihood. There are still few other occupations which people are getting involved, even though it is not coming under the category of those five inappropriate livelihood. So still we can see those are not really harmless. Say for example, loan sharking. Say one is giving money, but one is asking huge interest, and you even threaten the other person who is not going to give it back or not paying it on time. So you are doing some forceful threatening in order to get the interest. So those kind of things are also there. And as I mentioned, people are doing some overestimation or what you call exaggeration when they are doing the advertising. Say something is there in your product, but you are exaggerating what its benefits and trying to impress the people, and you are doing many different ways to impress them, and ultimately they buy it. But really there is no such value, there is no such proper ingredients in the product, but you are cheating in that sense. So therefore, when it comes to say selling of these different items, so sometimes people are exaggerating and doing a lot of advertising and try to impress others, try to sell their products. So those things are there. So when we are talking this correct livelihood, therefore one has to become somewhat truthful, somewhat honest. And again, not only that, one has to feel that one is contented. So because when one doesn't feel contented, when one has so many desires, so that leads to have many issues. Because you want to earn more and more, you are not satisfied. So you haven't yet fulfilled all your desires. So you have a lot of desires related to the physical happiness. You want to become more luxurious. So in that sense, even you are earning a lot of money, still it is not enough. You feel always unfulfilled or unsatisfied. So in order to get involved in the correct livelihood, one essential component is feeling happy, feeling contented. So if you are able to have less desires, apichata, then actually you can have a correct livelihood easily, because you know you are happy, you are contented. It is not that you are poor, you are having enough money, which is enough to satisfy yourself and your, say, spouse. So that is there. And there are other sides, like say there are what you call getting involved in the armies, navies, and these what you the various forces. So that is also another aspect we can consider under this category. There is an interesting sutta called Yodha Jiva Sutta, where one of the soldiers come and meet the Buddha, and he mentioned, "Bante, I am in the battle. I am in the battlefield, and I hate all the force. I hate enemies. I always have kind of anger, or I want to get revenge from these enemies, and I always burning with such kind of an anger. And I am going to the battlefield and I am killing them, and this is my way of occupation. I have heard, since I am say getting rid of all the enemies, I have heard from my ancestors that I will be reborn in a good place because I am killing the enemies." And so that is the kind of an explanation he is giving, and he wants to verify this with the Buddha. And Buddha basically refused answering it. And again he is asking for the second time, also Buddha refusing it. And again he is asking for the third time. And at that time Buddha mentioned, "So you are doing something wrong. Because if you are burning with hatred, and if you are trying to acquire someone else's property by force, using weapons, and you are fighting for that, and you are always hating those enemies, and you are trying to kill, and you are basically burning yourself even before the sort of the battle, so you are burning yourself, you are burning with hatred, so how are you going to have a good birth or good rebirth in the future? So you will be reborn in hell." So this is the kind of an explanation Buddha is giving in this Yodha Jiva Sutta. Now we have a question, then is it incorrect to protect one's life, or is it incorrect to protect one's field? Is it incorrect to protect one's country, one's region? So this is the question now we have to answer. Now, protecting one's country, protecting one's region is one thing. Acquiring someone else's countries, acquiring someone else's region, and threatening them, hating them, is another thing. So you are allowed to protect your country, you are allowed to protect your region, because it's all legitimately, it belongs to you. So you have to protect it. So if you are having such kind of an attitude, it is allowed. Because basically, legitimately, you are given the authority on that country, authority on that region. So now you are in the armies to protect it. That is basically approved. But on the other hand, if you are not satisfied with that, say you are going to invade another country, you are going to invade another territory, so that is going beyond the limit. So that is not approved. So when you are protecting what you have, there you are having some sort of a, you can get involved in a compassionate manner, that say you, this is your country and these are the people and they have to be protected, and you have some sort of a responsibility in that, so you are doing it honestly and you have compassion towards these people. So these are innocent people, they are without any weapons, so those have to be protected from whoever coming from the outside, or whoever the enemies within and trying to disturb the peacefulness. So this kind of attitude is there. So therefore one has to check the attitude when you are going into the forces or these armies or whatever, and in that sense it is allowed. So Yodha Jiva Sutta is therefore one area that one is trying to protect, whatever the region or country. And there are other interesting sutta called Thalaputta Sutta, where Buddha discuss with a person who is getting involved with dancing and dramas. So he's a leader in a dancing group, And one day he come and meet the Buddha. And he is telling Bhante, I am basically making others happy by showing various dances, various say performances, so that the others are really happy. They are clapping, they are laughing, and all this enjoyment is there. So I have heard from my ancestors, so and after the death I'll be reborn in a heaven. So are you able to approve this? So this is the question he is asking from the Buddha. And there also Buddha refused to answer. So for the second time he is asking the same question. Then for the second time Buddha refused. And for the third time also he is asking. Now Buddha is answering. Buddha mentioned, now the people are in a way innocent, but you are now arousing unborn or unarisen lust in them. So you are using various techniques, you are using various dancing to impress them and to arouse a lot of lust in them, a lot of laga. And sometimes you are performing certain activities, say dramas. So those actually causing to arouse unarisen hatred in them. Suppose you are showing some sort of an exciting activity, you are showing some sort of a fighting and all these things. By looking at that, people actually get disturbed and they are really like to look at it, but they also start to burn with lust and hatred. And the performances showing are quite deluding, and they are helping to bound these people to the samsara. So therefore you are in a way promoting lust, hatred and illusion. So how are you going to reborn in a heaven when you are promoting, say, lust, hatred and delusion in people? So you yourself is actually burning and getting entangled in lust, hatred and delusion, and you are promoting that, and you are trying to persuade someone else also in the same path. So in that sense Buddha mentioned that at the end of the death, so you will be reborn in hell. So actually once this person heard it, he started to cry. Then Buddha mentioned that I have told you that don't ask this question from me. So then Thalaputta mentioned it is not because the reason that I am it is not the reason that I am why I am crying. Rather, for all this long period, my ancestors have basically cheated me. My ancestors have basically cheated me, telling that I will be reborn in a good place because of I am entertaining others. So this is something interesting that we can pay attention, where Buddha mentioned that if you are trying to promote hatred in others, if you are trying to promote lust in others, and if you are trying to promote some sort of a delusion in others, so it is not going to be beneficial to yourself. So on the other hand, if you are trying not to promote lust and lust, hatred, delusion, then of course you may have get a better position. So therefore this is another area that we can see when it comes to right livelihood. So are we using our livelihood through our occupation, through our profession? Are we promoting lust in others? Are we promoting hatred in others? Are we promoting any kind of a delusion in others? So this is something also that we can look into. And now we can get into the second category, the second type of samma ajiva, that is the samma ajiva based on supramundane path and becomes a path factor, and it is noble and it is free from influxes. Now I have preached, or I have explained in a way which is refining the livelihood. So therefore now we can fit in here the livelihood which is supramundane, becoming a path factor, noble, and it is free from influxes. So there are actually what Buddha mentioned is that correct livelihood one is engaged with in a spiritual side. It is not a typical person now, rather he has some aspiration to develop the Noble Eightfold Path. So right livelihood is not a single fold or single factor that one is developing as an individual factor, but it's a kind of a combined effect. Say for example, Buddha mentioned katancha bhikkave sammaditti pubbangama hoti, how monks correct view becoming to the front, become the foremost. Miccha ajivam miccha ajivoti pajanati, samma ajivan samma ajivoti pajanati, sasa hoti sammaditti. So one knows very well what is wrong livelihood. One knows very well what is wrong livelihood. So therefore he is leaving aside wrong livelihood and now practicing right livelihood. So in order to do that, he should have a correct understanding about wrong livelihood as well as the right livelihood. So that is the point. So that is where the samma ditti, right view, coming to the front. So in order to do right livelihood, you should know what is livelihood, correct livelihood. And again, you should know what is wrong livelihood. So that knowledge, that understanding belongs to the samma ditti, correct view. So therefore always that samma ditti is guiding you, right view is guiding you when you are fulfilling right livelihood. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned miccha ajivasya pahanaya vayamati samma ajivasya upasampadaya swasya hoti samma vayamo. You are always having effort to avoid wrong livelihood, to remove wrong livelihood, and to get involved in the correct livelihood. So you are continuously refining yourself. So your occupation, your profession, your livelihood, you are trying to refine further and further, going into the proper side and leaving aside the bad side. So that requires ongoing effort. So that is the samma vayama. So sato miccha ajivam pajahati, sato samma ajivam upasampajya viharati, sasa hoti samma sati. So you are quite mindful of what you are doing. So as I mentioned, before you are conducting it, you are mindful. While you are conducting it, you are mindful. At the end of the task, again you are mindful. So you are having fair amount of mindfulness. So you are always monitoring yourself, you are observing yourself. As a result, you are able to refine correct livelihood. So knowingly that you are removing wrong livelihood, knowingly you are adhere to correct livelihood. So that requires mindfulness. That is the correct mindfulness, samma sati, come into the picture. So therefore Buddha mentioned tasime tayo dhamma samma ajivang anupari dhavanti anupari vattanti seyati idam samma ditti samma vayamo samma sati. So these three path factors, samma ditti, right view, samma vayama, right effort, samma sati, right mindfulness, are going hand in hand with right livelihood. So they are basically helping right livelihood. So right livelihood is basically involved in this with these three path factors when you are developing further and further. So therefore, when it comes to the noble supramundane path factor of right livelihood, it is not a kind of a single path factor. You get a lot of support from few other path factors, and now you are making a kind of a collective effort. So that helps you to refine your livelihood. That is where Buddha mentioned yanko bhikkave arya cittasse anasava cittasse arya magga samangino arya maggam bhavayato miccha ajiva arati virati pativirati veramani ayam bhikkave samma ajivo ariyo anasavo lokuttaro maggango. So what Buddha mentioned there is, now you are a person now leading a fairly spiritual life, and you are having some responsibility in your life. You are not carelessly attending to it.
you are now focused towards further development and you are refining yourself. So therefore, in you there is right livelihood now. Now you are a person who is now developing Noble Eightfold Path. So within you there is right livelihood, and there you are trying to remove wrong livelihood as much as possible. You are trying to avoid, prevent wrong livelihood as much as possible. So Buddha emphasized it here. Arati virati pati virati veramani. Not just veramani, avoiding, rather you are trying to slowly remove even a little amount of wrong livelihood which you are engaged with, and so that you are properly in the right livelihood. And there you can actually refine to further extent. Say for example, when you are involved in the various livelihood, it may be a correct livelihood, sometimes it may promote a self. Say for example, you are a doctor and you are supporting a lot of patients and you are trying to recover them, you are giving correct say medicine, and therefore many people are coming to consult you. So this is a typical scenario. So in this situation, actually you are doing something good, and this is the correct livelihood. But now you have to be careful that many people may start to praise you and talking in appreciating with you, and that can promote a self view, and you should be careful in that. So when certain thoughts are coming in your mind, when others are praising you, are you making a self out of this process? Because there are many self-promoting thoughts can occur in the mind which actually promotes some amount of ignorance. So as I mentioned, now you are developing the Noble Eightfold Path and you yourself have well recognized through Sammaditti that there is no ongoing person, an individual here. It's a kind of a causal reaction going to happen. Dependent origination is kind of in action. So it is a kind of a cause and effect relationship, it is happening. So you have some deep understanding now coming from the right view, Sammaditti. Now the livelihood, even though it is correct, sometimes it may try to promote a self. As I mentioned, some others may start to praise you, to appreciate you. On such occasion now you have to be careful not to promote a self. It is not that you are giving up the occupation. You are continuing your occupation, your profession. But you are careful enough not to promote a self out of that. Not to promote conceit out of that. You know that suppose you are engaged with something responsible. You are a kind of an executive. That you are the chief. So there may be a lot of other people depending on you. Other people who are sort of praising you. So they are your subordinates. On such situation, you should understand that I should not promote conceit here. I should not proud here. Rather, I mean, during the situation, during the office environment, definitely you may have to play your role. There is no argument. That is correct. But you have to be careful not to promote a self here, not to promote ignorance here, avijja here. So that is some area that we have to deal with. And on the other hand, while you are engaged with your profession, there may be others who are respecting you, and there may be others who are not respecting you and trying to condemn you and trying to cut off you. And many things are there in the office environment. So while you are doing or engaged in this profession, are you able to tackle those defilements? So when various such defilements are coming into the mind, when you are involved with this livelihood, are you able to tackle them properly? Because now you are trying to improve yourself further and further. It is not just you are avoiding wrong livelihood and getting involved in the right livelihood. You are even careful enough to do it properly so that you are not promoting any defilement, promoting any influxes. Say while engaged in your profession, there may be certain people who are coming too close to you, and you may even develop some sort of an affection towards them, and you may even sort of acting in favor of them. And on the other hand, there may be other people who are also doing the correct job, but you are not helping them, or you are not doing the correct action towards them, because they are not praising you, or they are not approving what you are doing, something like that. So you sometimes trying to get rid of them. But if they are doing also the correct thing, so how to get an unbiased decision? So these are certain areas that we can refine in the correct livelihood. One aspect is to have kind of an unbiased approach in correct decision making, and again maintaining kind of an equal attitude towards everyone, not getting involved with favoritism, and on the other hand, avoiding any kind of defilements, influxes developing because of the livelihood. So these are the areas that we can talk when it comes to the supramundane type of livelihood, where you are involved in correct livelihood, at the same time you are taking care or careful enough to avoid promoting any kind of defilements. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
So, Bhante, there's a couple of questions that were... there's a question that was last week that we didn't get time to address. Sorry for the background noise. My niece and nephew are playing right next to me, and
right,
I don't
right.
have a place to hide.
Right.
So the question is, dear Bhante, when a yogi have to deal with some issue face-to-face with another person or party, yogi understand this issue and analyze it in terms of his practice and realize it's all nothing to go around but hard to conceive to other party. So yogi has only two things to do. One is to run away from that moment, or second is to deal with it. Running away is not liking by other party. The question is how to deal with it in condition of Dhamma practice. Please may you give us some strategies to handle these situations.
Yeah. So I think as you said, trying to handle it is the proper approach, because if you are trying to simply ignore it or to avoid it, so that is not that you are where you are not going to give any solution. So taking challenges is something that that Vipassana yogi is interested of, because that gives him opportunity to understand the difficulties, understand how you are approaching, how you are doing the decision making, and what defilements are possible. So likewise, the proper approach is definitely that you are facing the situation. You may start to discuss with others, you try to recognize their problem, and you try to recognize all the different ways and means to give a solution, because such kind of an unbiased approach is possible for a person who is properly having some amount of developed mindfulness. Because you know, as even today we discussed, otherwise we are going for favoritism. So we have certain people which we like, and we are trying to promote them, and we are cutting off the others. But when you have enough mindfulness, you can actually understand this tendency in yourself. So I am having some sort of a liking towards this person, therefore I am trying to promote him. On the other hand, I don't having any liking towards another person, but he also doing his job properly, and I am trying to demote him. So this is something that I am doing wrong. So that kind of a correct wise reflection is required, and it is possible for a person who has a kind of an introspection, who has correct mindfulness, who has some self-awareness. So when such correct awareness is there, you can get an unbiased decision, and therefore you can give the correct direction. So therefore, I too feel that you got to face the situation rather than trying to completely avoid it. But it doesn't mean that you always have to get into the picture or you are jumping into the problem. You are not trying to ask for any problem, or you are not trying to jump yourself, put yourself unnecessarily to a problem. So there are situations that we can simply understand that this is not an appropriate place to go. These are the people that you should avoid. These are the wrong people or bad people, asappurisa. So if you have such understanding, so Buddha mentioned that don't go and get involved with them. Don't go and associate with them. So that is there. But on the other hand, so while you are doing your task properly, if certain problem is coming on your way and you understand it is coming on my way and I have to give a solution, so at that time I should not ignore, rather I have to properly approach it, I have to properly give a solution to that. Yes.
So I'd like to invite Teacher Debbie to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Bhante, I noticed from last time when you, I couldn't, my question couldn't be answered because of lack of time.
Uh-huh.
When you were talking about right action, and then you also mentioned about to understand the concept of anatta, and you touched on the elements. You said the man or woman is only elements, and the physical world is also only elements, and there is no difference between the internal and external. When I do my meditation, once I have a fair amount of samadhi, I inspect those elements now. You know, like the ailment you can see with the breath, and when the body is very light and where sort of like vibrations, you can sort of feel the patavi aspect of it, some sort of, you know, like particles or whatever. So I can see that in my mind as the patavi. Is that the way to go about it, Bhante, or is there another way that you recommend?
So basically, I mean, the mapping of the world is not the important thing. Suppose, say, for example, when you are feeling hardness, so you understand it is patavi, it is the patavi dhatu. But immediately mapping that experience with the corresponding name of the element is not the point. So you have to keep the mind as much as possible in a relaxed position and free from inner chatter, and not allowing the mind to come to the forefront and giving you various instructions, various commentaries about this book, that book, that preaching, this preaching. So that is something that we need to avoid. So keeping the mind quiet as much as possible, giving more emphasis on the direct experience. So you are having a very calm, quiet, focused mind, and with that you are experiencing various element characteristics. So recognizing these various element characteristics is the key thing. So therefore, recognizing various patavi dhatu, in the sense that the characteristics, you are continuing. Say at the beginning you are able to recognize, say, hardness, using which you are able to establish mindfulness, and once fair amount of mindfulness is already established, now you can try to recognize few other characteristics. The, say for example, patavi dhatu may has other characteristics like softness, because at the beginning you didn't get that side, you only recognize hardness. But softness is also another side of it, so you are now trying to recognize softness. You are able to recognize heaviness, and you are now trying to recognize lightness. You are able to recognize gross feeling, so that after that you are trying to recognize, say, smoothness. So likewise, there are certain characteristics which are more evident, and there are ones who are not that evident. So refining mindfulness and refining the dhatu manasikara is where you are using the already available, already known characteristics in order to get to know already unknown characteristics. They are still available, but I am not yet known to them, so I am now trying to have some understanding about them. So likewise, your meditation become more and more sort of very comprehensive, and throughout your session now more and more elements characteristics are visible, and there you are more convinced. So everywhere what is available is the element characteristics. Internally I am experiencing them, externally I am experiencing them. So you are quite confident that it is nothing but elements available in this whole physical world.
But then, when we are sitting down now, we can feel the hardness one day.
Yes.
And we can also, we don't have to actually go into meditation for the hardness, softness, because, you know, the hands are very soft anyway, the palms, you know, when you have the palms together, you can feel that softness as opposed to the hardness when you're sitting down on the floor.
Yes.
And then even, you know, you can feel your teeth, that's hardness, and the lips are softness. So you don't have to go into meditation for that softness.
So that is the kind of a direction that Buddha given. Now, if you look at Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, so Buddha first of all gives such examples. Okay, these are the areas, these are the, say, body parts which contain Patavi Dhatu. So this is a kind of a direction for us to first start. So as we are continuing that, so we may lose those names. So we may lose those names and we only fairly put our attention or well establish ourselves only to the characteristic side. So those names are simple directions, conventional directions only given at the beginning for us to start the session. And as we are continuing that again and again, we don't need those names. Say lips and teeth and all these things. Say for example, in the lips we understand the softness, in the teeth we understand the hardness. True. Suppose you are continuing your practice again and again. So now, when you pay attention closer to the teeth, the name teeth is gone. What you are experiencing is the hardness. The name lips are gone, but you are experiencing is the softness. So those all conventional signs, names, labels are all dropped. And your mind is well focused only to the more fundamental characteristics, direct experience, and that is the element characteristics.
So, I suppose we can when we are sitting and not meditating, we can see some of those characteristics anyway.
Sure.
But
yeah.
When we are meditating,
we get more closer, refined experience. Yes, yes. During
so
the meditation.
What I experience only, I kind of note only.
Sure.
You know?
Yes.
Like I don't say hardness, smoothness, roughness, lightness, heaviness, like that. Whatever I experience, I note it.
Yes, definitely.
Okay?
Yes, yes.
Is that all right?
Yes, yes. Because, I mean, it is not something that you are mentally creating and trying to experience.
Rather, do I go looking for it? Because
yes.
I mean, you can see hardness and softness if you are going to look for it, but I don't. Whatever comes up, I just note it. Is that the correct way?
Yeah, that is the correct approach. Actually, different approaches are there. Different approaches are there. Now, say, for example, in the Goenka practice, so you do some sort of a deliberate scanning of the whole body, expecting to notice certain characteristics available. So this is one approach. But on the other approach, which is more in the Mahasi tradition, is where you are not doing such a deliberate scanning. Rather, you are keeping some sort of an overview of the whole body. And whenever some sort of characteristics become prominent, you are immediately keeping your attention there and you are trying to recognize it.
Yeah. So that's also correct, Nabhanti?
Exactly.
Yeah. So when we do that, of course, we can miss certain things, but I suppose it's okay.
Yes, because thing is, whatever becoming prominent come to the surface, it is easy to recognize, and we are not doing any kind of deliberate action there. Rather, we keep ourselves quite calm, relaxed. Whenever things are coming out, whenever they are manifesting, we are able to recognize. But the point, interesting point here is that that more and more your vigilance or this observation become more and more intense, so there is no opportunity for you not to have these characteristics. So there are many, many different characteristics becoming evident again and again, because your clear comprehension is improving, mindfulness is improving, concentration is improving. As a result of that, very subtle characteristics also become evident to you. So therefore, this observation become more refined, and even in this Mahasri edition, so you may even understand, so every time there is something present.
Yes.
So something is present, some kind of element characteristics is available, so you are immediately ready to locate your attention there, focus your attention there, and to recognize it. So now you are constantly recognizing various element characteristics, and you are continuing it, and you are improving wisdom through that. And on the other hand, suppose you are doing it again and again for a long time, and there are occasions, now these characteristics start to fade away.
Yes.
So that is also there. They start to fade away and they lose their individual characteristics, and they start to show you something common among everyone. So everything is impermanent, everything is unsatisfactory, and there is no any kind of ongoing essence there. So nothing but characteristics are there. So likewise, you are turning your attention more onto the common characteristics. So that is happening in both traditions actually.
Yes,
yeah.
Bhante,
yes.
Yeah. So you feel more and more light, and then the gross things that you experience initially becomes light, finer and finer, including the air, the breath, as well as the body.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, once they disappear totally, so if you are able to keep your attention, say, without holding to anything, without grasping anything, kind of maintaining a free mind, so that is something where Buddha recommend, say for example, if I were to tell you some instructions given in the Satipatthana Sutta, Dhatu Manasikara, so where Buddha mentioned iti ajjattanva kaye kayanupassi viharati bahiddava kaye kayanupassi viharati ajjatta bahiddava kaye kayanupassi viharati. So internal and external, you are observing various characteristics. Samudaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati, vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. Now you are coming to the common characteristics. Previously you are able to recognize so many individual characteristics, and they were in the improving side. Now later, as you are further and further improving yourself, you are coming to the common characteristics that they all are showing the same nature. They behave in the same pattern. So they have the nature to arise, they have the nature to pass away, they are quite fragile. So likewise, you're getting this understanding of impermanence using these elements. What happens ultimately is that your mind can't fix them, because they are so rapid, they are so quick, they are quickly arising, quickly passing away, quickly arising, quickly passing away. Then udayavya, arising and passing away knowledge become more improved, intense, and ultimately your mind cannot grasp this speed or this whole process, and ultimately it gives it up. So yes. then the mind become free, because there is no sign at all in the mind. So this is where now Buddha say anisthitocha viharati na cakinchi loke upadhi. Now you got to associate nothing basically. Just keep the mind free. Just keep the mind free, free from grasping anything in the world.
Yes, Bhante.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you,
Bhante.
Yeah, okay.
Bhante, I was very joyful listening to your answer to that question. So for the next question, I'd like to invite Renuka to please ask.
Hello, Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Bhante, Bhante, when I was listening to your answer, I was thinking of one of my experiences about this kind of a situation. So I thought I'll share it with you.
Yeah.
Sometimes when we sit and experience the hardness, I move into and see why I am experiencing hardness with against what? Because my body is soft, the surface is hard, because of that I feel the hardness. And so the body and the surface is both of hardness thing, but I feel hardness from the surface. And another example, I would say, when we are having a hot shower with hot water, the water runs on your body, keep making you warm, but the body is, because body is cold, I can feel the warmthness. So actually, this is only a science, sanya bandhe.
Yeah, I mean,
a kind of sanya we are getting in a different forms, but there is, the elements are same, but we are getting different sanya.
Yeah, we can say so. Yeah, we actually do perceive in terms of kind of a comparison. So with respect to some sort of a already preconceived idea, okay, this is why I call as cool. This is I call as hot. This is I call as hardness. This is I call as smoothness. So this depends on some sort of a comparison lies in ourselves. And therefore, something hard for me may not be hard for another person. Something good for me is may not be good for another person. I mean, even it is common in the coming to the feeling. Say, for example, I am now, just to give an example, suppose you are given a hot tea. And assume that you are a person who likes to have a hot tea with some amount of sugar and you enjoy it. But another person doesn't like hot tea. He likes to have, make it little cool, warm, and then he is enjoying it. So if we are giving a really hot tea to him, he can't enjoy. He feels unhappy about it. So likewise, this happiness and unhappiness is quite subjective. So here also, hardness, softness, we are calling them with those names. And anyway, we have some amount of understanding, okay, when I am touching a chair, I feel hard. Say, when I am touching, say, my hand, say, it is soft. So we have some sort of, say, common understanding that this is the hardness and this is the softness. So using that is quite enough, because what is important is to recognize all those different kind of elements at the beginning. Ultimately, we lose that individual, say, characteristics, and ultimately all of them start to show the same behavior. So temporarily only we have to consider them one category as hard and another category as soft, but ultimately they all, both categories, start to show the same behavior.
And another thing, actually, I'm watching this, you know, the fire. We have a fireplace at home, and this is winter in Australia.
Right.
So we put the fireplace in the night. So when you put a fireplace, it's a log, the hard log. And once it starts burning, how it turns into flames and, you know, how the flames coming out of the fire log, and it's turned into the hard patavi, dhatu, turn into vayu, teja dhatu, and it's turned into the air and goes away, you know.
Yeah.
I watched that, and it's an amazing thing that how these things are continuously changing.
Yes.
So I really enjoy watching that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has become a kind of a meditation for me. So I think the whole, even if I put my hand into this thing, it will happen the same thing. So there's no difference from the wood and my body. That is what I understood.
Yes.
So that is another aspects I saw this, the changing of different elements to different the one element to another one.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll yeah. share that with you, Bhante.
Yes, actually this transformation is happening. Now if you are, when you are boiling water, now assume that it was kind of ice cubes and it is then transferred into water. And as you are boiling it, it becomes a vapor. So likewise, this transition is there in the physical world. And therefore, I mean, whenever we are considering things as permanent, so this is hard, this is soft. So that is a kind of a permanent notion that we are getting. But they are not really permanent. They are constantly changing their behavior. So as you mentioned, so they may even transform from one form to another form. Say water becomes a vapor, say ice becomes water. So likewise, they are constant, there is a possibility of transformation. So it is because of our ignorance that we consider these things are permanent and they show their such behavior constantly. So there is no such thing. So that is where the during the Dhatu Manasikara meditation, that is where the yogi is coming to, or what he is going to realize. So when he is coming to the view of the elements, so he may perceive that everywhere it is kind of elements, and they are also not representing kind of a fixed state, rather they are also constantly changing, constantly arising and passing away. It's like a full of mess in a way, full of flux, we can say. So it's a kind of a flux available, and that is to which actually you become somewhat disenchanted. Because when something is fixed, when something is with a fixed shape, so we can easily get attached to it. But when you are losing that shape, when you are losing that permanent sign, that mark, that boundary, then it is difficult to grasp. Because that it is not fixed. So it is constantly in a kind of a flux, constantly changing. So then the mind loses the grasping, mind loses the interest. And now the marks, signs, demarcations, boundaries, all are becoming blurred. So what is available is simply a flux to which you are sort of disenchanted. You are not happy without it, with it. And the mind now easily lets go of it. So this is where the dispassion is coming to the action. So the whole process becoming like a flux, not showing their individual characteristics. So it is not interesting, and it is a kind of a flux. And now kind of a dispassion is arising in the mind. So dispassion leads to the letting go, not for grasping. So when things have a fixed form, interesting color, fixed shape, ignorantly we go and grasp. The opposite happens here. Now there is no fixed shape, there is no kind of a color, there is no any boundary, there are no lines, demarcations. Now everything is in a flux to which mind is not interested, mind has some sort of a disenchantment, and therefore mind can't grasp. Instead, mind start to let go. Now mind become free. Now the freedom is becoming possible, and the mind time to time loses everything, relinquish everything and become free. So this freedom has to be further cultivated. So the same process we are continuing, again and again mind become free, again and again mind become free. So this freedom has to be something that we have to encourage, we have to recognize. So how this freedom happens? When mind does not grasp anything, what is the nature of the mind? There is no any sign in the mind. There is no any mental image in the mind. There are no any say boundaries, demarcations in the mind. So mind is becoming fairly spacious, free from any signs. So mind's mind become more luminous in that sense, more spacious. Nothing is basically there. So the clarity of the mind improves. Freedom of the mind is improving. So that you need to start to appreciate. Now you are trying to step more in that side. You are now trying to dwell more in that side, in that more freedom side. So that is how the path in a way evolves.
excuse me, Bhante, if I ask, you know, sometimes people can get sad also in that situation, isn't it, Bhante?
A little bit of sadness can happen because he was thinking, he was in a wrong assumption that this is a really beautiful thing and it is fixed and it has this particular permanent shape and it is really, there is something substantial there. So that kind of a wrong understanding is available. But when you understand the opposite, there is nothing substantial here, complete, it is beyond my control and it can't give lasting happiness to me and it's constantly changing, it is impermanent, kind of a disgust can happen. True.
So, Bhante, but when we really see this is the nature.
Yeah.
The mind start to accept it in kind of a way, Bhante.
No, so. Actually, the mind has to accept. slowly. I mean, that is why we have to do it slowly. I mean, because in a way, kind of the maturity, you know, now the mind is now kind of having some amount of maturity because it was with some wrong understanding, wrong perception, what we call sanya vipallasa, wrong perception, where we think, we assume that things are permanent, we assume that things can provide us happiness and things can be in our control and there is something available, something substantial. But as we are improving the understanding, so you are slowly recognizing the opposite. Things are constantly changing. Everything is impermanent. Everything like a flux. Nothing substantial. There is no any core here. So you are slowly trying to understand this bitter truth. So it has to happen slowly. And slowly, even if it is, you can accompany the cause and effect. That is also quite interesting. Because the impermanence actually can get more support from the cause and effect relationship. Because ultimately, when you have to drop everything, when you have to relinquish everything, if you get a strong feeling of I, then it is difficult. That you found that the whole body is getting into some sort of a disintegration. And you are losing I. So you might get frightened. But on the other hand, when you are keeping cause and effect relationship into the picture, slowly you will understand it is there is no I here. It's a matter of, it's a kind of a cause and effect relationship is happening. So that is what happening here. So there is no any permanent I, a permanent self here. So that understanding helps you to give up easily. So you are coming to the say vipassana, you are doing the element meditation and you are sort of developing that wisdom and there is a region that you are approaching, everything become flux. At that time you are able to understand that and you are ready to give up, you are ready to relinquish because there is no person here, there is no self here, there is no I here, but something kind of ongoing process is here. So you are easily, happily you are letting go. Easily, happily you give up everything and the mind can be kept in that freedom for a long time. So therefore, that is why, I mean, many different ways we can support this relinquishment. And as you said, so at that time, mind is happy to give up things rather than holding things.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you. It's very clear and it's very helpful to me. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so we...
Thank you,
Bhante.
Yeah. Yes, that's the last question.
Okay. So you can have some fun with your niece and everyone today. Okay. So then...
they're following me everywhere in the house.
Right.
I cannot hide from them.
I see. Okay, then... Since there is no any other question, we can wind up the session. So by listening to Dhamma and discussing Dhamma, we have accumulated a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with everyone and let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya එත්තාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුණ්‍ය සම්පදං සම්මේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සම්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා. එත්තාවතාච අම්මේහි සම්බතං පුණ්‍ය සම්පදං සම්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්දිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු ශාසනං. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්දිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්දිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං. ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ. ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ. ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. සාදු සාදු සාදු.